I'm Jean Gray, publisher of American Entrepreneurship Today and host of the podcast series Experience Voices, where I talk with highly accomplished people who share the critical elements that led to their success. How many of us have come up with great ideas but have failed to act? Our guests today are two angel investors who fund startup entrepreneurs, those who have taken the high-risk plunge to pursue their dreams. Stacy Pena and Brian Engelman are fund managers for the San Diego Angel Conference, who share their insight about the entrepreneurs they back and why just having a great idea is not enough to gain investor funding. I pose to them, is it the jockey or the horse that runs the best startup race? I'm going to start it off with Brian. What do they mean when they're referring to a jockey and a horse? Aren't we talking about funding or a racetrack?
Yeah, we're talking about angel investing, and thanks for having us on your podcast, Gene. You know, typically the jockey is going to be the entrepreneur and the horse is going to be the business. And as everybody realizes, the reality is it's a mixture of both. But if we were forced to choose, I'd have to say it would be the jockey. We've seen innumerable cases where the right jockey is able to make course corrections to the horse, while the fastest horses in the field can be taken down by the wrong jockey. The cool thing is the vast majority of us can be awesome jockeys by understanding our weaknesses and working to improve those, hiring the right talent around us to fill those voids as necessary. At the extreme, if an entrepreneur just decides, you know what, I just don't like running the company, I love doing the tech, then hire yourself a co-founder. Bring that person in and have them do that work for you.
So, Stacy, what do you feel about this metaphor?
I also agree with Brian. I definitely think you can take that an A team and B product is better than an A product and a B team. And that just because Brian had mentioned that they can course correct quickly, they can pivot, they can see way ahead in the future to see if there's going to be any obstacles, more than an inexperienced founder.
Well, as both active angels, you must have experience with the founding entrepreneurs and the quirks that they bring with them. What do you feel are some of the positive traits of an entrepreneur you have funded? We can get into a couple of the negative ones, but Brian, I'll kick off with you again. What do you think is a couple positive traits for an entrepreneur who's worthy of being funded?
Sure. Well, we do like to see somebody who's got experience in the space. That's always helpful. Somebody who's got a passion for the product or service. And, you know, sometimes hearing the story behind that, why, you know, is it a parent that died of some particular type of cancer and you're very passionate about solving that, as an example? Someone who's coachable, definitely somebody who is going to be available to answer questions when an investor has those questions, and at the same time set appropriate boundaries, right? If you're spending your entire day answering questions, you're not doing the job of the business, and that's very important as well. So those to me are some positive traits that I like
seeing. Stacy, Brian mentioned the word coachable. How do you interpret that when you're looking at, you funded a particular business plan, the money is coming into the startup, now you're engaging with that entrepreneur. Where does the word coachable fit in?
A certain founder comes to mind. She was strong, confident, and resilient, but not as coachable in terms of being flexible on her valuation. And when we're not seeing eye to eye, she continued to stay the course, and it really impacted her ability to go on and raise more money at that valuation. That is probably one of the more concepts that is really important in being coachable.
So has experience shown both of you that's on a checklist, that if you're seeing, even though an entrepreneur who's extremely passionate about their business model, many, if not most, of those business models have to be adjusted once they're in the market. Do you have that on your little checklist of when you're interfacing with a pitching entrepreneur and seeing a personality trait of rigidity?
Yeah, that's definitely a yellow flag. It may not be a red flag. And, you know, listen, as an entrepreneur, if you ask 10 people about one thing or another in your business, you're guaranteed to get at least 9 different opinions, right? You can't listen to every single thing. It's just impossible. But I think one of the things Stacey was pointing out specific to valuation is early on, it is challenging. How do you value a company that's just not in the market yet or just getting into the market? And there are concerns about future funding. You want to finish that round and you don't want to have a down round, meaning a valuation lower next time than this time. And that's part of the process that we go through, certainly at San Diego Angel Conference. And being coachable to me means you're willing to listen to those outside voices. You have the ability to take a course that's different from the one you intended to take based on the best information you've got at that time, right? Information is imperfect. And at the angel stage, this also means taking feedback on things like your presentation and considering different market.
Right. You're engaging with them through the presentation process and seeing how they're reacting to your questions and whether they're engaging well. In the circumstance when a startup is coming to you and you have either equal co-founders or an entrepreneur who you think is really good, but you know there's a skill gap, What do you say to them? Stacey, I'll throw this to you. Is having equal co-founders a positive, negative, or neither?
It could be neither, but most of the time it is a yellow flag. As investors, we want to know there's one person who's ultimately going to make that decision. And when there's two chiefs, at some point, they are going to disagree with one another, and it's going to stall innovation. It's going to stall them getting to market, getting new funding. Preferably, we like to see a distinctive difference between a founder and a co-founder.
And what about a case where you really like the entrepreneur, but there's a skill gap? Do you hang back and tell them, come back when you have more people lined up for these other positions, or you just move on to another candidate and let them figure it out?
Well, if an entrepreneur came through the SDAC process and there was a big skill set that was going to hinder them meeting that next milestone, then we would have to really do some deep due diligence to make sure that once that money was provided, that they would be able to close that skill gap. Brian, do you have any other comments?
I'd say it probably depends on that gap, right? How important is that gap? How big is that gap? Where are they in their development process? We do have a lot of single founders, right? We look at pre-seed, seed, and some early, Series A. And so we come across companies that have a single founder. And for those in particular, I think it's very important for us to see that A, they recognize those skill gaps. B, they have a path to filling that gap. We actually have a finalist that our finalists were just selected 2 days ago. We actually have a finalist that did that during our process, actually, just hired CTO about 10 days ago. And we haven't even had a chance to meet that CTO yet. We'll be doing that in this next round. That's an example of somebody who recognizes the needs of the company, where her strengths are, where she's not strong, and where she needs the most help early on. And she showed us that she's able to do that and execute on it. And that, to us, is the sign of a good entrepreneur.
When a entrepreneur is doing a pitch deck, and they are, because we're focusing on team in our discussion, is it valid for them to list individuals who are on an advisory board who they say, if I am funded, this individual will come on board? Do you like that approach, that they've identified people, but they cannot yet afford them to be in the venture?
Yeah, very much so. You know, depending on the stage, these companies, I think, as you just kind of pointed out, Gene, they're not going to even have boards yet. They just have advisory panels or advisory boards. They don't have a formal board yet. And identifying those that might become new hires or those that might move from an advisory position to a formal board position after funding, that's another sign of a good entrepreneur in most investors' minds.
Well, let's tackle the whole aspect of leadership, is especially since there are so many solo entrepreneurs who are really passionate, but you know, they may or may not have executive level experience in overseeing companies. When you're dealing, now you've put your money in and you see an individual not showing the leadership that is going to get to the next funding milestone, do angels intervene? Do you sit down and try to help this individual understand what good leadership is, or you haven't come across that as a problem because you've screened them so well? You're both Stacey smiling. I need an answer to this. I'll have to call on Stacey. Have you ever intervened with a funded entrepreneur about their weak leadership skills?
I think it really depends on the relationship that the investor has with the founder, and there's a trust there that the investor can go in and see if there's, I don't want to say miss or the leadership is lacking, but at this stage, most of our companies, they're very small teams. There's not a lot of leadership going on. There's just a lot of execution and planning and strategy. As the team grows, leadership becomes much more important. And that executive level leadership skill set obviously becomes more important. And the advisors on their board, the investors as their mentors, usually can bring that to the table at the time that it's needed. But we haven't come across any really negative instances. What about you, Brian?
Well, I think we were both smiling, Jean, because we wish we were that good at screening, right? And you know, for the entrepreneurs that are listening to this podcast, one of the things that every investor should be doing as they're evaluating whether or not to fund a startup is, look, can I spend time every month for the next 5, 6, 10 years with this founder and the founder's team, right? And that's a very serious consideration. As far as your question, Gene, I think it really depends on how far along that company is. As I said, kind of from the pre-seed through Series A, there's a wide range of companies. Some, again, maybe individual entrepreneurs with maybe advisory boards. As you get on into seed and Series A, these companies should have formal boards. And if you're a lead investor, one of the things that's commonly done is you get a seat on that board. Okay. There will be many, many investors, and the majority of those investors are not going to be sitting on the board. They may have an advisory capacity on that board, but they wouldn't have a voting capacity. But if you're sitting on that board and leadership isn't right, there's actually a fiduciary duty to act. And whether that action is helping that founder, maybe they're blind to that weakness in leadership, maybe they're blind to how they're affecting the rest of their team. It may just be some training or retraining or some coaching from the board members. Or in the extreme, it may be necessary to look at bringing on a replacement, right? That doesn't mean that the founders gets kicked out. I know that happens from time to time, but I think the objective would be to keep that expertise on and maybe bring somebody else into that leadership role that can be more effective.
I guess the most public case of that is Uber, when they look how far they went with their founder before actually a change was made. So it is a very difficult decision. Then maybe take us through, you have a startup pre-seed, seed, and then Series A. Can you describe a little bit of the metamorphosis that goes on in a company? Because, you know, I guess the most obvious one is, in order for a company to grow, you have to bring on people. And we are kind of touching on that in terms of the team. But is there another way of looking at the elements within the startup that change as you grow in size and go through different funding stages? Is there now the CFO becomes more important if you're going for a Series A, whereas less important in a pre-seed round?
I'd say that you're right there. That's a good example. From the business side, you kind of move from an idea, concept, prototype, first to market, as you move into a Series A, you really need to be showing some traction, right? Every industry is different, and what traction means is going to be different. SaaS companies need to have a growing number of customers, preferably showing stickiness or that customers are returning and reusing that on a monthly or yearly basis. Biotech has to have proof of concept and be moving towards regulatory approval, et cetera. You know, again, every industry is a little bit different, but with each of those stages, you need to be moving forward and proving to future investors that this is worth really more and more money, right? Because as you move on into Series A and beyond, you know, you could be talking tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars.
So I thought maybe we would move a little bit into the conference that the San Diego Angel Conference that is occurring yearly now and in the spring. Describe what your typical applicants are, because I think I know from history that you accept around 100 for the program in terms of months in advance of the actual conference. So, Stacy, describe a little bit about who comes and applies for the conference, why do they get accepted, and when they do get accepted, what are you doing to help them prepare for the conference?
Our preparation for the conference starts the fall before the actual conference follows in the spring of the following year. We host a number of workshops that bring entrepreneurs together to work through coaching workshops and consulting through our sister company, the Brink SBDC, to get their pitch deck and be investment ready. We use our ecosystem of partners to attract entrepreneurs who are interested in fundraising. And so we work with those entrepreneurs over 4 months to get them to where they're ready to apply to the San Diego Angel Conference, and use that as deal flow to train our new angel investors. It's really kind of feeding the pipeline for our angel investors, because the San Diego Angel Conference mission is to activate new angels and to fund innovative companies that can grow and return.
So clarify, I know the announcement goes out looking for applicants. You know, it's publicly disseminated. The number I had in my head is 100. Are there 100 applicants accepted for that program and then it's winnowed down, or all 100 immediately goes into the conference for later evaluation?
We have attracted 100 applicants, over 100 applicants this year. And basically what that means is they've gone in and they've gone into our application portal and imported all of their documents, their pitch deck, and a 1-minute video. From that, we will take that 100 and we will spread them out across the angel investors on teams to evaluate every one of those 100 applicants. We will then get together to discuss and whittle that down to about 50 companies. Once we have the 50 companies, we will put them on a ballot, have further discussion, further high-level due diligence, and the investors will vote for their top 25. And that is kind of where it really starts, is once we get to 25, then we'll bring them in to make a 3-minute presentation over 2 nights. The next week, we will take that 25 and get to our semifinalists. We will repeat that process until we are down to our top six, which just happened yesterday. And those top six, we will work with over the next 2 months, doing very, very deep, a deep dive due diligence into every aspect of the business, from team to competition to go-to-market strategy to all the financials. And we break up into different due diligence teams for those top six.
So That's what I was going to say. Then on the day of the conference, are those six all presenting?
Yes, they will pitch at the finale. And the great thing about it is that we do not decide on the winner until that all six have been pitched their companies. And we will go into chambers and discuss who is going to win and who and if we want to fund any runner-ups. In that moment, we are actually deciding who is going to walk away with the funding.
So Brian, I understand that there is a pool of funds that's created, but that pool also may change based upon additional money that may come through on the day of the conference. Is that true?
Yes, it is. The way the Angel Conference is set up, we're an LLC, and each of the members is basically buying units within that LLC. And you can buy as many units as you want, but we cap out voting units at 4 so that somebody doesn't come in with a block of money at the very end and make the decision for everyone. This is a group decision that's part of the learning process at San Diego Angel Conference for those new angel investors. And that's where it gets a little bit wild and woolly. We've written into the LLC that assuming we raise $200,000, that winning company gets $200,000. As we raise additional money, it's totally up to the investors how that is spread out. If we think we've got the next Google, then, you know, maybe we go all in. But more typically, since one of the things we're trying to teach angel investors is it's good to have a portfolio of companies. This is a very risky environment where, unfortunately, 7 out of 10 typically will fail, right? We want to spread that money out and have a portfolio of companies. We've invested in, most of the time, 3 companies. One year, we went for 5. But we've decided to, especially in the environment the last couple of years, to write bigger checks to the companies, and we've selected 3. One winner, who typically gets between $250,000 and $350,000, and the others, we try to not go below $100,000, and that sometimes helps us determine how many companies and how much to give each of those runners up.
At that point, I imagine the competition among the presenters is getting pretty fierce, you know, because they could, I would imagine if I was there, I'd almost be tasting the 200,000, but I somehow have to knock off the other 5 to get the money. Going back into chambers, are there any common threads that are pulled out to say it was the presentations that made the difference or a particular factor? How nitty gritty does it get into that private room in which you now have to separate really 6, you know, highly touted or thought of ventures?
That's right. We have discussions along the way. At each stage that Stacy mentioned, the 25 to 12 where they're giving us 3-minute pitches, and then the 12 to the finalists where they're giving us 10-minute pitches, and then this finalist where they're doing their 10-minute pitches again. All the while we're having conversations, we're meeting as small groups, we're meeting as large groups. So we get into fairly good detail. Honestly, this is a Series A due diligence that we're doing on everybody. And for those that are a little bit earlier, it's a bit of a hard slog for the entrepreneurs. It's a lot of work. But to a person, each one of them has come back and say how valuable it was to them. Because if they're going to continue going on funding, they've got to do all of this anyway, right? And it really is a wonderful combination of teaching angel investors some of the questions that they need to be at, well, hopefully all of the questions that they need to be asking. What are some of the yellow and red flags they need to be looking for? What type of investments interest them? While at the same time, for the founders, they're learning a great deal whether they get funding or not. There's a term that Stacy used earlier in the podcast, an SPV. And what's exciting is even companies that don't actually get funding from SDAC often attract 3, 4, 5, 10 investors that are interested, and they may have come in quote unquote fifth place, right? Whatever place they would have come in the finals, and they still end up with $100,000 of investment. Doesn't always happen, but the exciting thing is it's lead generation for the investors, and it's a fantastic opportunity for founders to get in front of anywhere between typically 60 to 80 investors every single year.
So if I'm participating as an entrepreneur, and let's say, even if I am not in the top 6, Is there a communication among the angel groups in California or the Southwest where a sixth or seventh or eighth or ninth place venture feels, just as you said, some extra benefit by the grapevine? Does that work?
Certainly. Among the San Diego angel investment community, yes. We have examples of that. Past years, we've already got examples of that. This year, where we've got, I think it's four or five companies that have been dropped from the competition, but they've got enough interest from investors that they're even either making direct investments or they're finding other mechanisms to help these founders out. Typically, within the community, there may be some crosstalk, certainly. When it comes to the finalists, remember, they have due diligence documents that we've created for them. And so we have a particular agreement that binds these other organizations to the same rules, which is don't share the due diligence document with the founders. Sorry, founders, you know, and don't spread this out without our permission, because it is our due diligence document. But certainly the finalists have those DD docs shared among many different, and not just in the region, but across the nation. As San Diego Angel Conference has grown, we've grown in reputation. We get very positive feedback on the due diligence we do on these companies. And that, in turn, has expanded the interest from other angel groups across the U.S.
So I just wanted to follow up, Stacey, with that one point. You mentioned the conference also is a great vehicle for bringing new angels into the fold. How does that work? It's the publicity, or existing angels are inviting other angels? How do you warm up a new investor?
We do that all season long. We continue to throw events that bring investors friends. They can kind of feel comfortable about understanding what angel investing is throughout the entire process. For the finale, throughout the process, we do a lot of PR about our process, about the entrepreneurs, about the quarterfinalists, about the semifinalists, and the finalists. There's a lot of press out there. We typically have someone at the conference from the press, and we use our partner ecosystem. You know, we give them tickets to hand to pass out to their stakeholders, as well as we have sponsorships, and we use their networks to get the word out, to attract people who may be interested in angel investing, don't know where to start. That's kind of a marketing machine that we use to gather additional investors, additional community leaders and executives, faculty, students. We really try to include everyone to get excited about this ecosystem.
So let's wrap up and talk a little bit about what's hot. Will every company applying to you have artificial intelligence at this point, even if they're not using it? Is there a .AI? Where is artificial intelligence impacting the applicant pool? You know, because it's hot really now, but it started last year. And, you know, what were you seeing, and what do you anticipate, or you're already seeing in who the applicants are?
Sure. Well, I think you said it well, Gene. The short answer is yes. We see a lot of AI this year, whether or not they're using AI. And, you know, a lot of AI is actually machine learning, which is fine. A lot of it kind of comes down to the data that's collected and how that's utilized within the company. We have a lot of biotech that, you know, arguably, again, a lot of it's ML, but arguably are getting into AI a little bit. And we take it with a grain of salt, and we look at those, you know, fairly closely to understand what's really being utilized. It is somewhat of a buzzword, and I would caution founders out there, entrepreneurs out there, not to just put AI. You know, it's great that you've got some technology that's related to AI in there, but make sure that you're truly using it, because it can be a little bit of a downer to hear AI and then understand what they're doing isn't anything close to AI.
Is it conversely, though, that are you seeing business models that are out of date because their industry has already moved into AI and their skill set missed the move? Are entrepreneurs being left on the side of the road unexpectedly because of how quickly AI has been embraced?
I don't think personally. I think it may be the opposite. My experience is that the entrepreneurs jump on it first, and it's some of the companies that are existing that might be a little bit slow to the game. And there's a good reason for it, right? I mean, you don't want to, you don't, as a large company, you don't want to put what you've got at risk. At the same time, the corporate graveyard is full of companies that weren't able to make those changes. So I think really, we are with AI where we might have been with the internet 30, 35 years ago, where everybody says it, everybody knows they need to do it, and nobody's doing it quite right yet.
Well, that's actually a really good analogy, I would say. It was great speaking to you both. I think you covered a number of points for aspiring entrepreneurs, especially those looking for funding, that they're hitting the mark on the fundamentals. And when they do approach angel investors or apply to a conference, they've got some things, foundation in place that gets them on your radar. Thank you, Stacy. Thank you, Brian. Really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Thank you, Jean.
It was a pleasure being here. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye now.
You have been listening to the podcast series Experience Voices. To hear more and subscribe, visit AmericanEntrepreneurship.com/podcast, where you will also find a form for listener feedback.